proceed to the fourth case, the United States versus Yancey.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Erica Bierma, and I represent the appellant Matthew Yancey in this matter. Today, this case presents the question of whether the Supreme Court decision in Heller changes the analysis of 922G3, an unlawful user of controlled substances in possession of a firearm violates the Second Amendment. I would submit that I recognize that I'm kind of in uncharted territory right now, and there really haven't been any appellate opinions outlining the scope or the contours of Heller at this point. Furthermore, there have been some district court opinions, but it appears as though it's kind of a cursory review of the Heller opinion, and they rely on the carve-out language, and then they don't decide the ultimate issue of what level of scrutiny should apply to this particular statute.
But, Ms. Bierma, I have a general question for you. You do address this a bit in your briefs, and that is that your approach comes across very much as a facial challenge to me. And this is not a First Amendment case, and the Supreme Court has been very sparing with facial challenges, and indeed the trend is strongly away from them in many areas. And given Mr. Yancey's concession that he was a daily user of marijuana, and given all of the other circumstances of this case, it seems difficult to me to see as applied how there's any ambiguity with regard to his status as a user, and it also seems difficult to me to imagine why Congress would not have said people who are regular users of illegal substances are people that we don't want to have guns, just like they don't want incompetence and they don't want other people to have guns.
Well, Your Honor, not looking at Mr. Yancey specifically, I believe that the statute needs to be addressed as to what the level of scrutiny is that applies generally to those types of individuals, because obviously Congress has concerns for felons, the mentally ill, as Your Honor explained. However, those have had prior judicial findings indicating that they're irresponsible, if you want to call them that.
Whereas, but given his concession, we don't have facts here that we need to find about his status as a user of illegal, it's marijuana in his case, but it's illegal, rightly or wrongly, that's what it is. And so I'm not sure that this strict scrutiny versus some other kind of scrutiny question is really something that we need to resolve here. You've conceded also in your brief that the government has a very strong interest in public safety, that the government has an interest in deterring abusive use of weapons. And so this just may not be the case where all of that comes to a head.
Well, Your Honor, as it relates to Mr. Yancey, I mean, as the government concedes in their brief that there were some issues associated with Mr. Yancey's statement alone, so if you remove his statement from the record because the government concedes that there were issues with his statement, you have mere use in March of 2006 and 2008, and I would respectfully submit that that isn't sufficient for the unlawful user, and also it's not sufficiently narrowly tailored for the public interest of protection.
Why can't we consider his confession?
There were issues associated with the nature in which it was obtained, and that the government conceded that they would not be introducing his statement only for impeachment purposes because of the nature of which it was obtained from him.
But he pleads guilty, though. I mean, you know, he reserves this abstract issue about 922G3, but I think the guilty plea might change the texture of that. And I thought, in fact, pre-Heller interpretations of 922G3 make it very clear that regular use is what's called for. It's not, you know, did you once 35 years ago have a joint? It's, you know, are you a regular user of controlled substances?
It's an unlawful user, and there isn't really a clear definition in case law or through the statute of what an unlawful user is. There's unlawful user or addict, and addict is defined under the controlled substances definition.
But I thought the cases had, in fact, said an unlawful user means a regular use that's close in time to the possession of the gun.
It's regular use with temporal proximity.
That's what I mean. That's the same thing as in close in time, temporal proximity. Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor. But with Mr. Yancey, he merely had a joint in his pocket and without his statement.
And a gun in his other pocket, a loaded gun in his other pocket, right?
Yes, he did have the revolver in his pants.
Okay.
Yes, he did.
So, all right.
But I would submit, Your Honors, that there have been...
Well, he wasn't a lawful user.
He wasn't, I'm sorry, Your Honor?
A lawful user of marijuana?
Well, I mean, there's the difference between user and unlawful user in the case law. But
no, I ask if he was a lawful user.
A lawful user of
marijuana.
Of marijuana.
Well, look, there's some substances that you're just not going to be a lawful user of. Maybe if we go down the medical marijuana path, there may someday be people who are both lawful users and unlawful users, but we're not really there yet with marijuana.
That's correct, Your Honor, but I don't think that the analysis is Mr. Yancey specifically. I think that it's the review of the G3 statute in general, not specific only to Mr. Yancey.
So you are making a facial challenge then to this statute?
Yes, Your Honor. Maybe it wasn't articulated sufficiently in my briefs, but okay. It's the statute in and of itself in light of the decision in Heller, and that we need guidance as to what the level of review of the statute is and whether, in light of Heller, that unlawful users in possession are now continued to be prohibited from using firearms.
So how do you reconcile this with our recent decision in Jackson?
Mr. Jackson was a drug dealer who used or had the firearm in close proximity to his drug dealing activities.
But he said it was for his self-protection, just like the people in Heller said.
Right, but Mr. Jackson was using the firearm, from my recollection of the case, that was associated with his drug dealing activities, and it was used in furtherance of his drug dealing activities, whereas Mr. Yancey had possession of a firearm, and there's no evidence to support that this was in furtherance of any illegal activity other than him just being an unlawful user of marijuana, whereas Mr. Jackson had been convicted of, I believe it was a possession of...
It was a 924C conviction.
Right, and it was in furtherance of. Mm-hmm. So I would submit that that is different than Mr. Yancey's situation. And also, it appears as though that looking at the congressional history of the firearm statutes, there's been the longstanding prohibition that's a part of the carve-out language, and I would submit that the unlawful user in possession isn't as long as of a longstanding prohibition, but it's also not sufficiently or precisely tailored as a felon or the mentally ill or, you know, not possessing a firearm in sensitive areas such as a school zone that would have the need for more public protection versus the individual, since Heller recognized that people now have an individual right to possess a firearm. And I would also submit that Mr. Yancey wasn't stockpiling weapons. He wasn't a drug dealer. He wasn't in a school zone. He's not a convicted felon, so there aren't any prior judicial findings indicating that he is, if you want to call him, an irresponsible person or a risky person.
So you think Congress is completely irrational to think that if people are drug users and they're going around carrying guns, you know, they might be in a position at some point to be purchasing, they might be in a position at some point to be robbed, they might be in a position at some point otherwise to be in a dangerous situation where the gun is around. You have to impute a lot to Congress, I think.
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that, you know, congressional findings haven't been that drug users specifically, whether it's unlawful users or addicts, are particularly dangerous people. There's nothing in Congress's findings. It seems as though that they were more concerned about the mental health, people that are mentally ill, felons, things of...
So somebody who's really addled ought to have a gun because they've been imbibing or otherwise ingesting a controlled substance.
It may not be the most responsible decision, but I don't think that necessarily makes them a risky person to possess a firearm. And if I may, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Rombolo.
Good morning, Your Honors. Rita Rumbelow for the United States. Throughout his opening brief and again in his reply brief, the appellant made clear that he was making this argument as applied to him. In fact, in my brief, I pointed out that even though he kept using the term as applied, it seemed that perhaps he was trying to raise a facial challenge. And then in the reply brief, footnote 2, the appellant responded that Yancey is not arguing for the application of the overbreadth doctrine, which allows the facial challenge to the constitutionality of a statute under the First Amendment. Rather, Yancey argues that the statute is unconstitutional as applied. So he'd never developed a facial challenge. That's not how the appellant approached it in this case at all. His continued argument has been this statute as applied to him and his specific facts, which, Judge Wood, you're absolutely correct. He pled guilty. He knew that the government had said initially, look, if you go to trial, we're not going to introduce your statement during our case in chief, but we reserve the right to use it during impeachment. Knowing that, he still chose to enter a timely guilty plea. That barred any challenge to the sufficiency of evidence on appeal. He never moved to withdraw his guilty plea, claiming that it wasn't knowing or that he didn't understand the elements of 922G3. And furthermore, he couldn't have, you know, waged a good challenge to or tried to withdraw his guilty plea because at the plea hearing, Judge Crabb said, so you did possess this firearm while you were a user of marijuana. Yes, ma'am.
So let me ask you this. I mean, we're kind of dancing around this as applied or facial, and I understand what you're saying, that you see the words as applied throughout his brief. One of the arguments is that post-Heller, we have put Second Amendment rights, at least vis-a-vis federal statutes, we're not worried about incorporation here, in that group of things for which there has to be a compelling governmental interest and least restrictive options and on and on and on. So even if it's as and only as applied to him, presumably if it's that very high level of scrutiny, that would apply to him too. So in that sense, it seems to me maybe one can reconcile this broad approach with the as applied. And as applied, do you think you can survive a strict scrutiny approach to this statute if we were to say, is it really necessary for Congress to prohibit people who have ever in their life used a controlled substance from having a gun?
Without conceding that is the appropriate standard, absolutely. In this particular case, and this court acknowledged in Jackson, too, that Heller only applies to the interests, that the Second Amendment only applies to the interests of law-abiding citizens. Mr. Yancey is not a law-abiding citizen, and neither is anybody else who unlawfully uses controlled substances or is addicted to them. So they're really outside the realm of the Second Amendment protection because they're not law-abiding citizens.
Well, addicts, you don't want to go quite that far, do you? I mean, using is one thing. That's an action. Somebody who's addicted might not be using at all anymore. Maybe they're even in a hospital trying to break the habit. That would go further than the Supreme Court has gone, I think. Just the mere status of being an addict.
I think if you took the position that once an addict, always an addict, yes. But let's just focus then again on the facts of this case. He is an unlawful user, so his use has to be contemporaneous with his possession of the firearm. That's during the same time period. And here, again, the facts overwhelmingly support his conviction under 922G3. So he is then engaged in other criminal activity. So whether, you know, he tries to claim the statute is overbroad as applied to him just fails in light of the facts of this case. He admittedly was violating other criminal laws at the same time he possessed this gun. And I think Congress does have a strong interest in prohibiting persons who choose to use, for lack of a better term, mind-altering controlled substances from possessing firearms. It can lead to increased danger. So, because he's not a law-abiding citizen, I don't think that is where the Jackson case comes into play here, because that is what that opinion noted. It's like, look, you don't have an unfettered right to have a firearm in your home for self-protection at the same time you're dealing drugs, because in reality, you're having that gun to protect your drugs, and that's just not what Heller meant. So So the contemporaneous.
Well, actually, I would have assumed you'd go even further and just say if you are either in the process of committing a felony or if you have in the past, kind of the 922G people have committed a felony. I'm assuming the government is defending those statutes as well against.
Absolutely. Absolutely, but we are when people are once again committing other criminal activities and they're not simply law-abiding citizens like Heller, we're not conceding at all that strict scrutiny applies, not at all. But I do think that the statutes like 922G3, especially in this case under an as-applied argument, could survive under strict scrutiny. Absolutely. If the court doesn't have any other questions, I ask that you affirm the judgment.
Thank you, Ms. Rumbelow.
Thank you.
Birma?
Just a few brief points, Your Honors. I would submit that the statute or the proper standard of review for the statute would be strict scrutiny, and that because there wasn't the prior judicial finding associated with Mr. Yancey's conviction, that the statute isn't sufficiently narrowly tailored for the compelling governmental interest, and that this court should vacate Mr. Yancey's judgment and remand with instructions to dismiss the indictment. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks, Vera. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The